Hi, friends. It's Susan Blackwell from The Spark File, your one-stop shop for creativity where our doors are open. And if you smell something delicious, that's because Laura Camion and I have been cooking up something special, something designed to make a big difference in people's creative lives. Enter The Brave Creative, a free 5-day guided adventure to rediscover the vitality, energy, and possibility in your creative process. Whether you're a writer, a performer, a baker, a candlestick maker, navigating the creative process can be a bear. But never fear, there's power in numbers at The Spark File. So let's link arms and make the trip together. It's May 13th through 17th, 7 p.m. Eastern, less than 1 hour per day. And if you can't join live, don't worry about it. You can watch the replay. Join us by going to thesparkfile.com to register. And hey, if you're not familiar with The Spark File, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Secondly, we work with hundreds of creatives of all different kinds who are ready to take their next big step. We help folks fear less and create more in a community that is so fun and vibrant. And if you have joined us before, know that we are going deep with The Brave Creative. So buckle up, Buttercup. It is going to be an awesome adventure. Go to thesparkfile.com to register, but do it soon because it all starts May 13th. Thesparkfile.com. Register now. Hi, this is part two of our conversation with Maida Wagner. If you haven't listened to part one, you might want to go back and listen to it or not. However you're doing it right. Also, if you're enjoying this conversation, be sure to visit thesparkfile.com/5types. That's thesparkfile.com/5, T-Y-P-E-S, to take the quiz and learn what creative type you are. Enjoy the show.
The Spark File podcast may contain profanity and other adult content.
Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file.
Spark file.
Could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark file.
Spark file.
I jump into my spark file.
Spark file.
Third type.
Is this a drinking game?
Yeah. Should be.
When you hear your type, just
take a shot.
When you relate to any of this.
Oh, we're going to be doing a lot of drinking then, because you might find traits in each of these. The third type is the sensitive soul. Sensitive soul is someone who's sensitive, you know, has maybe was called oversensitive as a kid, has a lot of feeling. Yeah. Everybody in the room just raised their hand.
Yes.
Has a lot of feeling, you know, wants to get it out. A lot of songwriters, a lot of singers are like this. A lot of actors are like this. Memoir writers who maybe want to go back to their childhood and figure out, how did I survive these traumas?
To order it.
Yes. Put it in order, make meaning of it.
Yes.
All those sorts of things. Sometimes,
this is when you were talking yesterday and just the top of my head lifted up and a great big phoenix flew out.
I wish I had seen that from the stage.
I didn't want to distract.
Slightly distracting, yeah. So feeling, you know, just feeling, meaning, making meaning. And sometimes also Mary J. Blige had said, you know, she heard a song.
I love you right now.
I love me too, because I'm an A-lister.
Just a casual Mary J. Blige reference.
A little Mary J. reference.
But you've done your homework.
I've done my homework. Yeah. I wish I could remember off the top of my head the song she heard, but she heard a song that made, and she had a, you know, tough childhood, tough upbringing. Yeah. She heard this song and it felt so uplifting to her and so inspiring to her that she thought, that's what I want to do. I want to sing, and I want to be able to do that for other people too.
Wow.
And that's part of a sensitive soul's kind of way into creativity, and part of their drive is to help other people.
Expressing
too.
Myself, I may help others express as well.
Yeah.
And together we can feel.
Exactly.
And have permission to feel the things.
Okay. Yeah.
Good.
Permission, I think, is part of that too.
So in addition to Mary J.,
Who else?
Oh, my goodness. You know, one of my favorite stories is, you know, the painting, The Scream.
Yeah.
So iconic painting. Yeah. He told the story of how he was very filled with anxiety. And he was, I love this story. He was standing on the edge of a fjord. Half the time, we don't know if these stories are true, but let's go with it.
In storytelling
Norway,
at its best.
Storytelling, and it was sunset, and he said the sky turned a blood red, and he heard an endless scream pass through nature.
Ooh. Edvard.
Edvard. He went and captured that on the canvas.
A little bit of chills.
And that was the spark for that
for
moment
that painting.
Sparked that painting.
Yes.
That makes me feel even more when I think about that painting, knowing the spark behind it.
Right.
Even it just strengthens that resonance.
I know it's not for everybody, but sidespark, for me, when I understand a spark behind a creative act, and it gives me some context for it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it isn't just me. I feel like I can understand the work more, mm-hmm. and I feel like I can sort of,
I think our friends at Story did a podcast recently called something about the work doesn't speak for itself.
Interesting.
And it was, in fact, how you strengthen your audience experience of it by sharing
the source spark.
What led you there?
Yeah.
How you got there. I mean, they didn't say the source spark, but we'll say the source spark.
TM.
Yeah. Copyright. Now they can't say it. So
we'll sue you.
I'm afraid. Yeah. I'm very afraid.
But I thought it was really interesting. I'm sure that's not true for everyone. Some people like the mystery.
Yeah.
But
or they just want they don't need all the shim sham. But but I do enjoy it.
Well,
I do
too. Orwell said.
Look at you.
Yes.
Talking Orwell.
We like it. Drop
Orwell
names.
To Mary J. Blige.
Drop the names.
He said that you really needed to understand something about an artist's upbringing to understand their motives for doing creative work.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So he was talking specifically about writers, but I've, trampled on him and decided this applies to all artists.
Yeah.
But I do think there's, I talk about this with my students sometimes. Sometimes, a lot of artists were not great, nice people.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at like Picasso and Hemingway, mm-hmm. lots of drama and mistreatment sometimes of women and all that kind of stuff. And it can mm-hmm. skew your way of looking at their work
mm-hmm.
in a way that they certainly would not have wanted, but that we have the curiosity to find out.
Right.
When Picasso painted Guernica, which is one of the great anti-war works of art of all time, he allegedly, this is what I read, had two women mud wrestling in front of him as his
inspiration.
Yeah. Maybe I misquoted mud wrestling, but they were fighting with each other. And he was like, come on, I'm working on an anti-war painting.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So that sort of gives you a feeling
That's a different feeling.
Yeah. Mm. So sometimes it can kind of distract from your pure appreciation. I think for myself, I like to see the art not knowing and then go back and see it knowing more.
Point, counterpoint.
Yeah.
I moderate a conference at the Metropolitan Opera each year, and I need some context. I need some just to be able to get inside and start a burgeoning enjoyment of the opera. A little bit of information and context is very helpful to me. But I also have had experiences where I'm like, I don't want to know anything about the movie. Don't want to know anything about the actors in the movie. I don't want to know about their romantic personal lives. I just, sometimes my purest experience of a piece of art is when none of that has been presented.
Mm-hmm. Right. Isn't that why, I saw a panel at the New Yorker Festival once with character actors and was like, I recognized all of them, but when I see them in something, I don't bring all that baggage
to
it, because they managed like artisans.
Did you just get up in the middle of that and march right on out the door? She's like, you're ruining my film going experience.
Protest right at the New Yorker Festival.
Okay, so far, to recap, let's recap. Mm-hmm. We have the A-lister. We have the artisan. We have the sensitive soul. Laura and I are feeling that.
Yeah.
And then we have the
game changer.
Game changer.
Okay. So the game changer.
The minute you said this, a name popped into my head. And then 2 minutes later, the name popped out of your mouth.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
That's right.
So I'll give you the broad overview, which is somebody who's, you know, visionary.
Yeah.
Somebody who... Because when you look at different forms of art, you know, a lot of rock songs, they've been following the same form basically
right.
for years,
mm-hmm.
right? You do different things within the form,
mm-hmm.
but still the same form more or less.
Mm-hmm.
You look at dance, it's like, why does classical dance have to have these certain steps that were developed a century ago? So it's somebody who looks at all this and says, yes, I've learned this, but I want to just break out of
the form.
I want to bring... It's not so much that they're looking to change the world, which we'll get to with the activists, but change a certain field of art
mm-hmm.
might change the culture and get people to look at things a little bit differently, right?
Is it change for change's sake, or are they changing because what they want to express needs a new form to be expressed?
That's a great question, because I have a section in the book in that chapter called Rebel Without a Cause. So sometimes it's just like the bad boys of rock and roll or something. I want the attention, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just they really see things differently. You know,
yeah.
I tell a story about Frank Lloyd Wright. He got the commission to do the Guggenheim Museum, which he did not get to live to see. But he said he looked up at the sky in New York and all he saw was skyscrapers, and he called them vertical coffins.
Mm.
All these people scurrying around their offices in these vertical coffins. And he thought, why can't we do a museum in the shape of a spiral?
Mm. Yep. And I think the spirit of Hilma af Klint sent a spark through time and space.
Yes,
yeah, she
that
did.
Landed on Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. I love that. So he did in the shape of a spiral. Painters objected to it because they were like, how are we going to have the paintings hung properly?
But my painting.
But my painting.
It's not a rectilinear structure.
And then critics, after the fact, they did not accept it right away. Some did. Some thought it looked like a cinnamon bun.
Yep. I have described it as the most stylish parking garage you have ever seen.
That is so true. So, but he did it, you know,
he did it.
Now, sometimes you have to be at a certain point in your career to pull these moves off.
That's right.
Especially when you're an artist who works on commissions, right?
Yeah. Mm.
But in the case of Lin-Manuel Miranda, who I spoke about yesterday, I think, you know, he's the game changer of our times, right?
Yeah.
The idea of doing.
So fun. I love hearing it. It's so fun to because he is a walking, talking human person.
Right.
And he is also a game changer.
I know, because we think of a lot, and I love all the historical figures, but it's nice to kind of know that we can talk about people right here, right now. And the way he did Hamilton and bringing in people of color to play the founding fathers and infusing hip-hop into it. But what was different about him, so many game changers received nothing but rejection in their lifetimes. Herman Melville received a letter of rejection for the novel Moby Dick, where the editor actually said, "Does it have to be a whale?"
Oh my gosh.
Listeners, take note. I hope that Herman Melville was like, "Editor, due respect.
Yes, it does.
You gotta go fuck yourself."
Exactly. And I'm sure he said it just like that.
You gotta go, like Mr. Howell, like Thurston Howell III.
Right.
You gotta go fuck yourself.
Stephen King, the most prolific writer of our times,
his
first novel, Carrie, rejected so many times that he took one of those spears that they use in restaurants to put receipts on, and he speared all his rejection letters. So I love that story.
That's a beautiful piece of sculpture now, isn't it?
Right.
Real nice.
Sale at Sotheby's for $2 million.
Right. But in the case of Lin-Manuel Miranda, he did not, I don't know if he did earlier on in his career, I don't think so, not that I'm aware of to too great an extent. He saw something, and the culture was ready for it.
Yeah.
Right.
They were
right
ready
place,
for
right
it.
Time.
He was ahead of the culture, right place, right time. He was able to bring them along and then have the most successful show of all time.
Right.
So he was onto something that wasn't, if you're too far ahead, that can be a very lonely
Helma
life.
Clint. Yeah.
Yeah.
Helma.
Yeah.
I feel like, so do you know Helma?
Yes.
So I feel like,
well, not personally.
I wish I did. 5'1", inches of fun.
Yeah.
I'm like thinking, which one is Helma here? And I was like, I think Helma is a game changer. How she fell, she was making abstract work before the big boys, independently of the big boys, and is a real disruptor, but had the presence of mind to know that the world would not be able to receive that work in her lifetime. So there was a mandate that it couldn't be released till 20 years later. Ooh, I feel like she's a game changer.
I didn't know that. That's a very cool story.
Possible she's an artisan?
Well, when you were telling about artisan, art for art's sake, I was like, is that Helma? And there was something about me that I was like, it doesn't feel right in the money. It doesn't feel like she slots into that.
Yeah.
But this game changer,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if she knew she was, though.
But tell me, what is the game changer driven by? Does the world need to see their game having been changed?
Good question.
I'm curious.
Yeah. I think of it as some combination of the ego and the artisan. Okay, they're very devoted to their art and a particular craft, but they have that ego of thinking, I'm not going to be among you little people, you know, doing, I don't know, I don't want to put anything down, but they would see, like, let's say, typical portraiture or landscape painting as being not different enough,
She was classically trained and had a whole body of work, especially from when she was at school, that was all, you know, flowers and portraits and things like that. And then when she got the mandate from, you know, she got the commission from the spirit guides, mm-hmm. she went mm-hmm. balls to the wall. Like, I think Helma's a game changer.
I'm gonna research her
yeah,
more.
Yeah, yeah. Please enjoy the first episode of the Spark File podcast.
Yeah.
Featuring our homegirl, Helma Ofclint.
I just wanted to say that sometimes game changers become so acceptable, it doesn't look like game changing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of the Impressionists, right? And we say, oh, what pretty paintings, beautiful. You know, I personally love them.
Like, you could get that mm-hmm. at Target and put it in a sweet frame you got at IKEA, and that would look so good in your college apartment. But
when they started out, it wasn't accepted to think of poppy, you know, red poppy flower could be worthy of art.
Right.
So art subjects had to be, you know, the monarchy or people of position, of money. So
that's
to say it had to be, you know, sitting still and that kind of thing. So to say nature, not just nature, but fleeting nature, a moment fleeting in time could be worthy putting down on canvas. Was revolutionary.
And what about the style of painting as well?
Yeah.
Those things that are game changers, like the subject matter or the way that it is portrayed, you change the game and then the game catches up with that. And
absolutely.
That becomes the de rigueur, right? It becomes
the
norm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until the game gets
changed again.
So again, we need context. So the more we learn about it, like, you would appreciate that piece of art perhaps more knowing in the time that it was made.
Right.
It was so outside of it.
Here's a side spark. So we had a student in our workshop the other day who I believe was a game changer. And this student, I can't, because we have a confidentiality agreement and we respect the things that people contribute in the class.
Say it.
I'm not going to say exactly what they were proposing, but they had a vision about a piece of art that they wanted to make. And in order to make it, they could barely find the language to talk about what they wanted to do.
It was amazing.
I was like, this is slippery, but this is real. There's some real art that is on the verge of being born. And I was like, game changer. And to understand this as teachers and as creative Sherpas for people, I think is very helpful. There was a moment where I got a little scared in the class, because I was like, how can I help this person with this game-changing vision bring it to life. But I was like, it's the same creative steps. It's the same deadlines and making and experimentation. Yes. It's just that what they're doing, maybe we haven't seen before because they're game changers. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So,
we want to prop that up. We want to encourage that.
Hang in, even if you don't completely have all the answers, if it's never been modeled before, if the game hasn't changed and pivoted in this direction yet,
that's right.
And maybe sometimes it's just like compassionate support. Mm-hmm.
They really need support because of this level of rejection.
That's
right. Truman Capote, he had the idea for something like In Cold Blood for 20 years.
Yes.
He wanted to take something that happened in real life.
Yeah.
But write about it with all the techniques and tools of a fiction writer, real characterization, real description. Yep. And he saw a little clip. Hello, viewers. Listeners, you can't see that. But a little clip in a newspaper about this horrific killing of an entire family in Kansas.
Dark spark.
Something in him. The New Yorker fortunately supported him on this crazy mission. And, oh, my God, years of his life he devoted to it, actually. And then it's sort of like, oh, sure, creative nonfiction.
True crime, really, truly into the mainstream.
But he had to have that patience. You know, he's sitting there going like, oh, I'll be doing that someday.
Amazing.
I'm waiting for the right moment.
Game changers.
So people actually said to him, to do that shows a lack of imagination.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it doesn't stem, entirely from your mind. You're basing it on real life situation. Yeah. And I love his retort. He said, I think that comment shows a lack of imagination.
It's true.
Boom.
But Maida, now you have to say it in the Truman Capote voice.
My husband does it really well.
Can we get your husband in here?
Matt, you've got to do the Capote. It's frightening the way he does it.
We'll edit it in post.
There you go.
Fifth type.
Well, I'll throw in a little editorial comment. I think they're so needed today, especially, which is the activist artist, which Orwell described as political purpose, which was the desire to push the world in a certain direction.
Love this.
So in the case of Orwell, you can say I'm a little consumed by him, not even by his book so much as his thinking, is he lived through the Spanish Civil War, World War I, World War II, fascism, Nazism.
Wow.
And to live in Europe during that time, not in the United States, meant you're just surrounded by death and destruction and millions upon millions of deaths. And like, what are we going to do about this world? You know, he actually participated in the Spanish Civil War, which a lot of artists did. I'm kind of studying that period in history a little bit now. But he felt like, he said from one point on, he felt like every sentence he wrote had to be for social democracy and against fascism. Mm. And that's when he wrote 1984.
Wow.
Now, I'm thinking not every single sentence. But it wasn't his first love. His first love was more the aesthetic quality of writing itself, of the beauty of it.
Yeah.
So but he maybe felt compelled.
A touch of the artisan.
Yeah.
But then really compelled by activism.
Yeah. So again, it's sort of like what drives you the most, not that you couldn't have those other qualities within you. So the activist, like Orwell, feels like, you know, we've got to change the world. We've got to do something about climate change and sexual assault and injustice everywhere.
And we can only do that if we can make people feel things first.
Right.
Feel it and then take action.
That's right. So the artist's role is to, you know, Howard Zinn described it as kind of a slow process, like water eroding rock. You know, you're not going to read a novel and tomorrow you're like ending a war necessarily, unfortunately. But little by little, and I talk with my students, sometimes it's a little sad to think, you know, Bob Dylan's anti-war songs were in 63. We didn't get out of Vietnam until I think 73, 74. Mm. So you could say, okay, well, was that a failure? No, it was just a
part
slow
of the consciousness.
Yeah.
But now with social media and the internet, these things are getting sped up and you can actually see some action faster.
I think just to reflect again on our friend Bono, A-lister, also an activist.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we're not all clear cut. There are these
absolutely
combinations.
And I actually call them the converted, which is somebody like Bono or like Beyonce start out, it strikes me as very ego-driven. But you know what? He absolutely has become an activist. And I probably would correct myself and say he most fits into that category now. When Beyonce did her thing at the 2016 Super Bowl, did Formation, lots of Black Lives Matter themes, lots of controversy. I was like, I know she had done some kind of like feminist messaging before, but this was like risk-taking.
Do you feel like in a life, in the life of an artist, there can be this shift potentially as one type is fully achieved and expressed.
And some healing.
Maybe some healing. There can be a transformation where an artist will really start to fill out the form of a different type.
Absolutely. Because if your drive when you're young is ego, that makes a lot of sense. You haven't achieved yet. So you, you're being achievement oriented, want to make your mark on the world, all those things. It's almost, you know, if you're 70 and 80 and still only driven by kind of like me, 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 that's almost, I don't know if I want to say it's sad, but it just feels like, can you expand your worldview a little bit more? Mm-hmm. And can you do things to kind of change the world a little bit more? And so you see this progression sometimes over a lifetime, very much from A-lister to activist, or maybe more into the sensitive soul category, where you're trying to still have an impact on someone.
I'm curious if that happens most for people who can check that box of like, okay, I achieved success versus the people who are like, no, I can't, I'm not going to look at these other ways to create until I get this level.
There's definitely something to that because in an interview with Tom York of Radiohead, you know, he doesn't want that pressure of having to be the activist. But then you see it in the lyrics, you know, he maybe protests too much. But that notion of, you know, you evolve as a person and you should evolve, I would think, within what drives you the most also.
Right.
I've been talking with someone who's also a writer. He says my book is kind of looking at it horizontally almost, the five types. And he's been doing some writing about more like vertical. And he thinks they mesh well together. Like, how do you kind of evolve over the course of a lifetime?
Yeah, that's interesting.
But the ego part about remaining relevant might still keep you in the A-lister category as you grow older.
I love this work.
I'm getting re-excited about
it. It's so good.
We love it. Keep going. It's so good.
And I want to take one of your workshops.
Please.
We'd be honored.
That would be a joy.
Are you kidding?
Oh, my God.
That would be amazing.
I would love that. Yeah.
I just keep thinking of layers like historical context, gender roles. And I noticed the two examples that we gave in artisans who don't try to get their work out there were female.
Very important point.
And I'm just curious about, like, you know, how can we also look at what role, you know, what permissions some of those artisans may not feel like they had?
Very good question. I have a section under the artisan chapter about anonymous, you know. So Jane Austen wrote, I think she signed Pride and Prejudice as the lady.
Wow.
And then she signed Sense and Sensibility as, you know, the lady who wrote Pride and Prejudice, something like that. The idea of, yes, women, people of color. You know, you go to a museum, you see quilts signed anonymous. Not necessarily because the person wanted to be anonymous. So
that's right.
To me, the true artisan personality doesn't seek fame and fortune necessarily. But then there are issues of gender, race, all the sorts of things of, were you allowed to have your name out there? You know, women who in history, writers who took men's names, like George Eliot. So they either went out as anonymous, they went out under a man's name sometimes. The writer Colette, her husband put his name on her books. So there's lots of those issues. So that was a little bit of my struggle with the artisan chapter. Is it a choice you're making? Is it your natural personality and inclination? So I wanted to acknowledge, just as you're saying, some of the historical factors.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would be fascinated by just all of the the historical characters that, you know, artists that you researched, and what we don't know about what box they might fit into.
Absolutely.
Because of what they were up against.
Yeah, yeah. That was a challenge in writing this, you know. It was an interesting challenge in doing it, because I didn't want to make too many assumptions about anybody.
Sidespark.
Yes.
Do you have boxes and boxes and boxes of research? What does it look like, all this research that went into this book?
Ooh. So the research went into the course that I teach first at Emerson College.
God, okay. That must be a barn burner.
You know, it's a lot of psychology studies, mm-hmm. a lot of journals, Sylvia Plath and Virginia Woolf. Mm. People used to be such inveterate letter writers.
Yeah.
Which, thank God, and we're not going to have that really anymore, I don't think.
We won't know the thoughts unless we check their
Instagram
feed. Facebook statuses for
I know.
It's like a diary.
But these letters and diaries were so fantastic because it really gave insight into what someone thought slightly differently from what their public face might be.
That's right, because they actually wrote it down, which was so amazing.
Virginia Woolf's diaries are all about, not all about, a lot of it is about the writing of Mrs. Dalloway. And so it's not like these people keep diaries, most of them, with the intention that they're going to be published.
Right.
And some of them would not have wanted them to be published.
That's right.
So it really, you know, Sylvia Plath's, first of all, these writers write in their diaries beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like hashtag emoji. They're writing works of art in their diaries, art.
Yeah, sometimes I have like a nightmare of morning pages being discovered later and being interpreted as a diary. And I'm like, no, those are morning pages.
That's really funny.
So the research was wonderful because I got the chance to propose a course at Emerson College.
Mm.
And I do have a marketing background. So the marketing side of my brain was, what's a class? What's a topic that could interest any creative student here across all fields?
That's right.
And then I thought, I was very interested in the activist artists primarily. And when I read Orwell's Why I Write essay, it just sent me down that whole path, thinking, because he lists four motives. That was very inspiring to me, this whole motive-driven thing.
So one spark was the opportunity for the course.
Yeah.
And that led to spark, mm-hmm. to spark.
Yeah. Can I do a humble brag?
Yes, please.
I've been told the students, the incoming freshmen, get to put down like 3 out of maybe 40 course possibilities of what they want to take freshman year for their liberal arts class. And mine has been in the top, like number one of their choice, some semesters, maybe not all.
Yes.
I believe
so
it.
Yes.
I believe it. And I will tell you, when I saw you on that stage yesterday, sharing this body of thought that you have developed, I wanted to take that course.
Oh, and come to Boston.
What a great
come
way.
Come to Boston.
I'll go to your workshop.
But you have to say it in a Boston accent.
We'll come to, when I think about that, I just think what my college years might have been like
I
taken that in my freshman year.
Yeah.
Just because I think I learned about myself over the course of those years.
Right,
you know, I have
right.
no regrets and loved my time there. But had I had this framework in my mind in year one,
it's
good
great.
Stuff.
It's really good stuff.
The A-lister in me does love when former students say, you know, that's the class I remembered from freshman year.
That's wonderful.
You know, so that's very gratifying.
Jumping towards the end.
Yes, this
question,
is incredible.
What's it all for?
Life or art or?
All this work
all
you've
this.
Been doing.
That's right.
All this living you've been living. What's it all for?
Oh my God. That's a huge question.
Isn't it just?
It's big.
You know what? The impetus for me was, I had wanted to write a book for years, okay? Mm-hmm. I think my higher goal still is to write a novel. Mm-hmm. But I was, you know, I'm sitting there teaching a class about creative motivation, and I'm like, but I haven't pinpointed my own yet, or I know mm-hmm. it, but I get stuck, and yes, I can do the shorter pieces. One of my hangups was, it sounds foolish, I just didn't know if I had this stick-to-itiveness. You know what I mean?
No, I think that's very relatable for a lot of people.
We can put that question to rest though now.
Now.
Look at the research.
It's a really fantastic
years
thing to learn
you,
about oneself.
Yeah, you did it.
That I could do that. And I saw, you know, my students, super creative, but everybody gets kind of lost along the way. My friends, so many of them wanting to write novels, wanting to do that, wanting to be a stand-up comic. I thought, wow, we're all kind of stuck. And then we have moments and then we go back to being stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started researching and, as I said, seeing this clarity of vision, I thought maybe we could all have that. And maybe the five types is a way into that. Mm-hmm. Can you figure out your own?
So is it
own?
To be of service to others?
Absolutely. You know, there's the ego part. Hey, I did a book.
Yes.
I get to be interviewed
on
podcasts.
You fed a whole lot of areas with this one project.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
It means a lot to me because of the satisfaction, the self-satisfaction, but hoping that it's helping other people achieve their creative potential. Really.
And you have laid the foundation to grow a number of additional creative projects out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Creativity begets creativity.
Absolutely.
Sparks beget sparks.
So last question, who or what is sparking you these days?
I will give you the honest answer. Can we get a little political here?
Sure.
Yes. I had been doing a lot of writing for the Boston Globe opinion pages. Funny kind of stuff, pop culture type of stuff, and relating it to politics. Loved doing that kind of writing. And then Trump came into office and everything felt very dark. And the opinion pages could only be about very serious, heavy things.
Yeah, that's right.
And I felt Trump made me stuck in my creative process.
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that hilarious?
Interesting.
And the most recent one I wrote, I got back into writing. I did do something more serious. But I really, before that, I had been a columnist for a magazine, online magazine called Pop Matters.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I love thinking about the intersection of pop culture and politics and all of that. So I think I have to say, forget about Trump. And that's the most polite way I can put that.
Get back to doing
the writing I love. And possibly, I do have ideas brewing for another book as well.
Wonderful.
Yes.
What's that
good.
Book called again? All Artists Are Crazy.
All creatives are crazy. What was our subtitle? We had a good one.
You said about being a stalker. We'll have to roll tape to figure out what that was.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Exactly.
Thank you so much to our guest, Maida Wagner. Check out her book, What's Your Creative Type? Harness the Power of Your Artistic Personality.
I feel like we both learned so much
so
today.
Much.
And
this is like the best interview I've had.
Oh,
because it was fun too.
I feel like our work and hopefully the listeners' work will only be expanded by what you have shared with the world. And speaking on behalf of Laura and myself, we cannot thank you enough.
Thank you.
Can you tell us all, where can we get your book? I forgot to ask you that
at
earlier.
Bookstores everywhere.
Everywhere. Amazon, it's already. It's
Amazon,
out there.
Amazon, mostly finding it online now.
Great.
Maybe a little of this talking about it. We'll get it popping
and
up in more
also,
bookstores.
Cams, you can also find it on my coffee table.
All right.
Hey.
That's it. I hope that this put another bunch of sparks in your file. Listen, if there's a spark you'd like us to explore, or if you've taken a spark and fanned it into a creative flame and you'd like to share that, won't you please email us at thesparkfile@gmail.com or submit it through our website. Smell me. We got a website, thesparkfile.com.
We'll even take your feedback, but you know the price of admission. First, you got to share a creative risk that you've taken recently.
No joking about that. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, 5-star review it. If you like this podcast, share it with people that you love. If you didn't like it, share it with Beth, your cool coworker. She is going to flip her shit over this podcast.
That's right. Beth's going to love us. If something tickles your fancy and gets your creative juices flowing, we're writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that's been knocking at your door. It's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a flame.
You got
to
sing it. You got to wing it. You got to Evelyn Nesbitt and full on velvet swing it.
You got to take it
and make it.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Bye.
We love you.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file.
Spark file.
could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark file. I jump into my spark file. Let's open up the spark file.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation with Maida Wagner. Now be sure to visit thesparkfile.com/5types. That's thesparkfile.com/5, T-Y-P-E-S, to take the quiz and learn what creative type you are.
Hi, friends. It's Susan Blackwell from The Spark File, your one-stop shop for creativity where our doors are open. And if you smell something delicious, that's because Laura Camion and I have been cooking up something special, something designed to make a big difference in people's creative lives. Enter The Brave Creative, a free 5-day guided adventure to rediscover the vitality, energy, and possibility in your creative process. Whether you're a writer, a performer, a baker, a candlestick maker, navigating the creative process can be a bear. But never fear, there's power in numbers at the Spark File. So let's link arms and make the trip together. It's May 13th through 17th, 7 p.m. Eastern, less than 1 hour per day. And if you can't join live, don't worry about it. You can watch the replay. Join us by going to thesparkfile.com to register. And hey, if you're not familiar with The Spark File, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Secondly, we work with hundreds of creatives of all different kinds who are ready to take their next big step. We help folks fear less and create more in a community that is so fun and vibrant. And if you have joined us before, know that we are going deep with The Brave Creative. So buckle up, Buttercup. It is going to be an awesome adventure. Go to thesparkfile.com to register, but do it soon because it all starts May 13th. Thesparkfile.com. Register now.